Attention, you're listening to The Antidote to Liberalism. The active ingredient in this program is common sense, which has been documented to prevent and even cure liberalism. Be advised that listening may cause you to lean to the right. The doctor will be with you momentarily. Here's your host, Todd Huff.
Well, it looks like Chris Matthews has finally changed his mind. In light of this eye-opening debate between the two socialists last night, hosted by what, NBC? I don't know, these guys are all the same to me. I think Chuck Todd was the moderator. But nonetheless, Chris Matthews, who has told us now for months that there is a substantial difference between the Democrats and the socialists, appears to have finally changed his tune in acknowledging in this tweet that he sent out last night at 11:06. He says, "My prediction, debate will bring Hillary closer to Bernie up here in New Hampshire, and will bring him up nationally because he's on equal platform with her." Now, I'm sure he'll try to tell us that he means Bernie can hold the big stage like Hillary, but why can Bernie hold the big stage like Hillary? Well, because the platform, the things that they talk about, are essentially the same thing. Bernie's just a better cheerleader. Hillary is, look, we've gone through the problems with Hillary. But this is a battle for socialist control of the Democrat Party. I mean, last night, Bernie Sanders, in his closing statement, said that we need a political revolution. I mean, I guess he's doing his best, what, Castro impersonation? What is this, Hugo Chavez up there? He's throwing off all pretense and telling us that we need a political revolution. They're calling for revolution. I mean, these words mean things. These things have significance throughout the annals of history. I mean, this is the same talk that you heard from Fidel Castro, Hugo Chavez. I mean, take your pick. Political revolution fought on behalf of the worker who's being corrupted by the taken advantage of by the evil corporation. He wants to give a litmus test, incidentally, Bernie does, to any Supreme Court justices that he nominates. I mean, I cringe thinking about this possibility. Bernie Sanders nominating a Supreme Court justice. I mean, what's that going to look like? Apparently, according to him, that nominee is going to have to pass his litmus test that says they are firmly against the Citizens United case. And we'll talk about this as the program comes together here today. But the Citizens United case, suffice it now to say, is to say, well, essentially that corporations can give money to the election process within, what, 60 days of the vote or what have you. And it's essentially, and if you want to make a leftist mad, just tell them this, the case that people cite that says the court ruled that corporations are people. If you want to make a leftist upset, I mean, where they're ready to fight, spit blood, I mean, they are willing to call your mother every name in the book. You tell them that corporations are nothing more than a group of people, and they will go absolute. I've seen it. They'll go absolutely ballistic. I'm not going to mention any names, but I can promise you that I've had this happen to me. By the way, I can tell you that I'm a corporation. I am an S corporation. I'm the sole owner of an S corporation. And there's times that I wish I could tell the IRS that I'm not the corporation. If the corporation did something that, you know, the IRS didn't like, which we don't engage in that here, but I'm just saying that the way that they tax it, the way that I'm responsible for it, the way that I have to file the reports, and the way that I'm legally bound and put this information about the corporation on my tax returns. I mean, I don't know who else the corporation is. It didn't exist before me, and it doesn't exist without me. And I'm tied to putting that personal information on my taxes, which I'm not saying I shouldn't, incidentally. I'm just saying, who do these people think these corporations are? So if I have a partner, if I have a corporation with two people, does it cease to be individuals at that point? What about three and four and 50? What if it's got 10,000? What if it's sold on the stock exchange? Is that the criteria to where it's no longer people making the decisions that are the people that are involved? But you want to make a leftist mad, you tell them that a corporation is a group of people. I mean, they will go absolutely livid. And Bernie Sanders, if someone will not rule against that decision, if one of his nominees, should he, God forbid this, but should he become president of the United States, he puts someone on the high court or, you know, up for nomination for the Supreme Court, which of course has to be approved by the Senate. He's not putting anyone up there until he basically gets a signature in blood that says that they will overturn, that they are in strong opposition of the decision in the Citizens United case involving, you know, money and politics and essentially personhood of corporations. And look, I'm not an attorney. I'm not going to, you know, there are things about the intricacies of this decision that I, you know, it's just not my expertise and candidly not my interest, but in general, that's what the case is, and that's what the left will be ready to fight you over at the drop of a hat, saying the corporations are people. So he's up there arguing for a litmus test. Hillary, on the other hand, is telling voters in New Hampshire, and I guess the rest of us who decide to watch this debate, she tells us to vote with our hearts and our heads. Unfortunately, she appeals to neither of those. I mean, when I use my head and I think about Hillary Clinton and I think about her positions, first of all, anytime she talks right now, because she's up on stage with the wildly popular socialist Bernie Sanders, it's a race to give away freebies. So if I think this through for about, 2 seconds, it's relatively clear what's going on here. We have an out-of-control government as it is. It's now approached, what, $19 trillion? Is that what it is? Did I see that? We're about to hit or just hit $19 trillion in debt. No big deal. Just keep chugging along here. Nothing to see here. Just let the government spend wildly. It's a party. It's a party over there. The money's not real. Hillary wants to increase that. Freebies, you name it. Anything you want, you've got it. She's there to give handouts. And so is Bernie. It's a race. It's a race between them. And anyone who spends, 3 minutes thinking about this has to know that this is not the way that a government can function. This is how governments implode. This is how governments collapse under their own weight. This is how governments become grease. But it's not just that we can't vote for her because of our heads, because of our brains, because of how idiotic these socialist policies are. In fact, if you just look around the world and just tell me where it's worked. Oh, I'm sure the leftists will tell me, what, Sweden or, I mean, all these places that they're going to compare to the United States of America. Have you looked at the size of our economy in comparison to the rest of these places that are heralded as these great socialist utopias? The size of our economy is enormous. Plus, let's not overlook this little fact. A lot of these countries don't have any military to speak of. And while we're constantly condemned for being the world's police force, and I don't believe we should be, those countries would have been gobbled up or under a serious threat by the Soviet Union during the Cold War if it wasn't for the influence, the power of the United States military, which, by the way, we pay for, which, by the way, we give essentially protection to these countries. They don't have to pay for that. We take care of it. I'm not saying we should do this. I'm just saying the idea that these socialist countries can live upon their own and survive and thrive. Those places that have created a little bit of, I don't know, a successful, I don't even want to call it successful, those that haven't collapsed. They exist in a world that has the United States of America, the greatest power, the economic engine that the world has ever known. Now, granted, we spend ourselves into oblivion, $19 trillion of debt, and it's out of control. But my point is that these policies don't work. Venezuela, Cuba, I mean, the Soviet Union. We could go on and on. This is not the way that things are supposed to be. They don't work. They do not work. We could go, and maybe one day we'll go through the reasons why, but I don't have the time for that right now. But suffice it to say, back to the Hillary situation, that she's asking people to vote for their heads. Her policies do not pass the test of applied logic and consideration. So what about the heart? I mean, I think you could even make the case that she appeals less to the heart. She's phony. She's calculated. She's manipulative. She's a liar. Heck, even the Bernie Sanders crowd chants she's a liar in Iowa as she's speaking on stage. Every time she goes out, her poll numbers drop. She cannot connect with people. She cannot connect with the average voter. Everything has to be staged. You have to pass a background check and have an FBI, essentially an FBI review of your history and your family's history before you're even allowed to sit down at a coffee table shop with her. It's just so cold and mechanical and distant. She's not likable. There's nothing there. I mean, part of me, I say this tongue-in-cheek, part of me feels sorry for this woman. She has nothing appealing about her as far as electability goes. She's got a bad philosophy. She's not likable. She's not charismatic. She has more baggage than O'Hare International Airport. I mean, this is just out of control, this whole election process. And now she's saying, vote with your heads and your heart. Well, I think that you cannot vote with either if you vote for Mrs. Clinton. I think the people that are going to vote for her are going to hold their nose and press the button, because they can't wrap their heads around what Bernie Sanders is talking about. They can't get behind that movement led by the Nutty Professor. They're not ready to have a political revolution. And yes, some people are going to vote for Hillary because she's a woman. Which, by the way, has she mentioned she's a woman? And a grandmother. And, by the way, she'll be a grandmother for the second time later this summer. I'm not sure that I've mentioned that or if she's mentioned that any, but just a public service announcement for those of you that are considering Hillary Clinton. She's standing in favor of failed ideas. She's unlikable. She's untrustworthy. She has a track record of lying, of destroying the lives of the women in the, 80s and 90s that encountered Bill and all that goes along with that. I don't even want to get into that right now. It's a distraction from what's really important at this point. It speaks to their character. I don't mean that. I just don't want to rehash that right now with all the Kathleen Willies and Monica Lewinsky's and all this sort of stuff. Paula Jones, I don't want to get into that. I'm not saying it doesn't matter. I'm just saying that we have socialism being preached on these stages. And we have people fawning and falling over and just ready to start a revolution, as Bernie said. Bernie's ready to usher in the revolution. This is what happens, incidentally, when you have a group of people that have been educated to hate this country, to believe that everything that it stands for is immoral. They believe that it's evil. They believe that capitalism is evil, the root of all the world's problems, ushered in by the United States of America. This is what you get. And now they're able to vote. They have no idea what they're talking about. They have no grasp of history. They have no idea that these are the same words and the same arguments and the same promises made by socialist dictator leaders. And look, I'm not implying that we have dictators in this country. I'm just saying it's the same rhetoric. It's the same rhetoric, and it moves in that direction. You don't have to like that, but that's what history teaches us. When people begin to give up some of their freedoms, they're quickly prepared to give away all of their freedoms for promises of these socialist utopias. It's happened time and time and time and time again. And they failed every single time, every time. But Bernie wants to lead the revolution, and he's got a multitude of people that are ready and willing to get behind him carrying that banner of socialism. It's unbelievable. Look, I got to stop and take a break. When we get back, we're going to get more into this debate and some other philosophical issues that I think matter very much as we look at the political landscape. So you're listening to The Antidote to Liberalism. Be back in a minute. Make sure your booster shots are up to date by signing up for our free monthly email newsletter. It's educational, it's fun, and it's free. Sign up today by going to theantidotoliberalism.com/newsletter. That's theantidotoliberalism.com/newsletter. For you, the listeners of The Antidote to Liberalism, Audible is offering a free audiobook download with a free 30-day trial to give you the opportunity to check out their service. I've been a member of Audible since May of 2014, and I love it. I've listened to novels, books on business, political books, you name it. In fact, one of my most recent downloads was given to me by one of our listeners, Ben Carson's America the Beautiful. What a good man and solid presidential candidate. But if you'd rather check out a great novel instead, I highly recommend The 12th Imam by Joel Rosenberg. Of course, you'll want to get the rest of his books in the series after that, too. To download your free audiobook today, go to audibletrial.com/antidote. Again, that's audibletrial.com/antidote for your free audiobook. There's nothing to lose with this free trial, so why not give it a try? Well, welcome back to The Antidote to Liberalism. I am your host, Todd Huff. You know, it is Friday, by the way. Hope you've had a good week. And look, it's Super Bowl weekend. It's always exciting time for me. Been a huge football fan since I was a little guy. And, you know, I'm not as much anymore. I don't know. There's multiple reasons for that. It gets harder and harder to you know, to follow it, to watch the games whenever you have, you know, three children and all that comes along with that, which, look, I love these little yahoos, so it's a good trade, but I don't know as much about the game as I once did, and don't follow it as closely. In fact, I don't think I've watched any of the Super Bowl hype. I've seen some of the things that have been said. Of course, I'm familiar now with this investigation into Peyton Manning and HGH or something that someone has alleged that he has taken in the past. I'm familiar with Cam Newton claiming that the reason people don't like him is because he's a black quarterback and that that idea scares them. He's different than anything that they've seen before. But beyond that, I haven't seen much about it. It should be a good game. You never know. You give these NFL coaches 2 weeks to prepare, and all bets are off. I mean, these guys, the game strategy and the planning, you know, if they know how to exploit a weakness or find a kink in the armor on the other side, it can lead to blowouts. And we've had blowouts, but it seems like there's been really good games in the past, I don't know, 5-7 years, something like that. But there for a while when I was a kid, it was blowout after blowout. I remember the 49ers beat someone 40 or so points. But anyway, it's a great weekend. Hope you can catch it. Broncos take on the Carolina Panthers. It could be the final time we see Peyton Manning. Who knows? I mean, this guy, he loves the game, and he's been good for the game. He's been great for the city of Indianapolis. Be a good end of the story to see Peyton win. But I like the Carolina Panthers too, so I don't really have a team I'm pulling for here. I really don't. Although I do look, I really like the idea of having, you know, Peyton win. So anyway, just hope for a good game, to be honest with you. So enjoy that, catch that Sunday. But in the meantime, we also have a debate tomorrow night for the Republicans, taking apparently a page out of the playbook of the Democrats here on a weekend debate. But I've seen that Carly's not going to be on the stage or something. Look, the Republican Party has shaken up a little bit since the Iowa caucus. We've had Huckabee drop out. We've had Rand Paul drop out. We've had Rick Santorum drop out. Santorum endorsed Marco Rubio. I don't know if the other two have endorsed anyone yet. I mean, I think Rand had, I want to say 4% in Iowa. I think that was right. So we're not talking about guys that were pulling in huge numbers, but they could definitely help one of those candidates get a bump. But we have New Hampshire on Tuesday, so through the weekend and into early next week, we'll be positioning for the New Hampshire vote, which is obviously much different than the Iowa vote, than the Iowa caucus, than the makeup of the state of Iowa. And so it'll be interesting to see. Trump, I believe, still has a pretty big lead there. Unless the polls are really wrong, Trump will likely win the state of New Hampshire. I think I saw he's up maybe 20 points. Is that right? 22 points? Cruz and Rubio. Of course, Kasich, you know, they think he might perform well in New Hampshire. Jeb Bush. Did you see Jeb Bush, by the way? Look, it's kind of a sad moment, and I know, you know, I'm not really a Jeb Bush fan. It's nothing personal. I just, we don't need another moderate or a guy that's of that, I don't know, of that style of politics in the Republican Party. We need someone that's going to radically change it, a strong, principled conservative that's going to stop the lunacy and is going to restore us to the constitutional republic that we were created to be. And I just don't know that, well, I don't really, Jeb's not that guy. I don't mean that in any bad way. I think he's a good guy. I think he's done some good things. He did some good things in the state of Florida. But what's crazy is between the years 1988 and 2008, there was a Clinton or a Bush running for the White House, and now again in 2016. It's crazy to think about, but anyway, that's not even my main reason. I don't think that it should stay in one family. We don't have a dynasty. We don't have a socialist regime that passes it from one generation to the next. So it's good to get the fresh blood in it. But my objections to Jeb are much, you know, more philosophical and style of approach and the way he looks at compromising with the other side instead of defeating their dangerous ideas. Those are my complaints about Jeb. But it's sad when you see him out on the campaign trail in New Hampshire. Once he's asking the audience to applaud. Some lady says that he may have persuaded her to vote for him, and he walks up and gives her a hug. You could tell it looks like the guy is really taking a beating in this political process, and I don't know. It's I don't like to see that. I really don't. I don't care who it is. But anyway, New Hampshire will happen on Tuesday. Again, it's not a big state, but it is an indicator. It's always important to perform well and, if possible, to win. And, of course, right now it's about securing delegates as well. So, anyway, Trump's still ahead there. We'll see. And then quickly after that, what, on the 20th, so 2 weeks from tomorrow, will be the South Carolina Republican primary. So that will be the biggest state so far to have completed their primary. And then we have Nevada on the 23rd, Republican caucus. And then on March 1st, Super Tuesday, that's when that's a huge day in selecting and determining the president. So this is really a critical time. If you don't know who you're going to support, you know, pay attention, really research and take a look at what these guys stand for. There's a lot of mudslinging going on right now. I mean, some of it there might be a reason. There might be a base reason for some of the things that are being said. Other things may be completely, you know, just political in nature. But look into this. Figure out who you think is the best constitutional conservative with the strongest leadership potential that can restore us to the principles that made America America, that made America the most prosperous engine on the face of the planet, that made America the place where liberty was available to all. And I'll give you a hint, that is not found on the Democrat side of the coin. No pun intended with Hillary Clinton's coin tosses going on over there, but nonetheless, a lot of important things going on here as we get close to New Hampshire, and of course the others in South Carolina, Nevada, and then the Super Tuesday. So anyway, I'm going to stop and take another break. When we get back, I want to talk about the something more ideological, going back to the Citizens United case, the problem of money in politics, the problem of corruption, and really addressing the root causes of that. So you're listening to The Antidote to Liberalism. We'll be back in just a minute. Are you looking for an alternative to employer-provided health insurance? Maybe your rates have skyrocketed, or maybe your employer doesn't provide health insurance. And then you visited healthcare.gov and realized how much of a debacle Obamacare really is. Why don't you take a look at what my family and I do for our healthcare needs? We're members of Samaritan Ministries, and we absolutely love it. If you're looking for a biblical, non-insurance approach to your healthcare needs, visit theantidotetoliberalism.com/healthcare to learn more. And as an added bonus, my listeners will receive an exclusive $50 credit, but only when you complete the application on my website. Go to theantidotetoliberalism.com to apply or to get more information. My family and I love it, and we think you will too. God bless. Welcome back to The Antidote to Liberalism. I am your host, Todd Huff. It is Friday. It is, what, February the 5th? It is a pleasure to be here. We mentioned Super Bowl on Sunday, Republican debate tomorrow night, New Hampshire on Tuesday. Busy time of year. Important time of year. before the break, I mentioned that we're going to go back into this Citizens United situation, and we're going to talk about the problems of corruption in politics. You know, the left will tell us that the problem in politics is money. Money is corrupt. Money causes people to buy elections, to do things that are not based upon principle and ideas, but it gives people an avenue, an incentive to do something that they wouldn't normally do. And I'm gonna challenge this notion. Now, I'm not saying that money has not given someone some sort of an incentive to do something they should not do. I'm just questioning, why do we blame the money? Money is amoral. You know what I mean by that, I'm sure. Amoral. I'm not saying immoral. I'm saying amoral. A meaning without. It's without morality. It is neither good nor evil. It can be used for good. It can be used for evil. It can be used to, you know, to fund something that is not acceptable, something that is illegal, that is sinful, that is evil, that is what have you, right? I mean, it can be used for that, but it can be used for an incredible amount of good too. It can be used to feed your family, to start a business, to help someone in need, to give to your church, there's as many good possible solution or uses for money as there are for bad. Money is amoral. It is without morality. It's like a gun. It, of course, it matters whose hands it's in. A gun is amoral. A gun is not something that wakes up in the morning and says, how am I going to kill someone? Same thing with money. It doesn't think, how am I going to go about and corrupt someone's life, destroy, have a negative impact on life on this planet. They just are tools. They are instruments. They are things that we can put to good use or to bad. And as such, what matters is the person who's utilizing the tool. And see, I maintain that corrupt politicians are the problem. It's people who are immoral, not the money, not the gun, not these inanimate things. It is the people that is the problem. You have to have someone who is willing to be corrupted by money in order for money to be corrupt. And I think it's dangerous living in a free society or one that, look, it used to be much freer than it is now, and we need to change that. But we still live in a free society, not as free as it should be. It's dangerous when we begin to limit what people can say. I mean, this is the First Amendment to the Constitution. Freedom of speech, freedom of religion. These things are in the First Amendment. They are of, look, I don't want to say that it's like an order of priority, but it is being the First Amendment, it indicated that it was something that was at the top of importance for maintaining a free, prosperous republic that was full of liberty. People should be able to think and say whatever they want to express. Now, of course, there's issues with libel and slander, but that's dealing with untruthful speech. And there's, of course, a series of criteria that determines if something is such. But you should be able to express opinions. If you think someone's political viewpoints are bad or dangerous, as I think Hillary Clinton's are, Bernie Sanders are, then I should be able to say that. And I should be able to say that if it's myself and another colleague of mine that share those same sentiments. If there's six of us, a half dozen of us that want to get together strategize, pool our resources, and say, this candidate is not good. I should be able to do that. Or 25 of us, or 50 of us, or 1,000 of us. And the left, the socialists among us, the left, the liberals, they want to limit that in some way. That's why they don't like Citizens United. They don't like people, groups of people, under the names of that are corporations or what have you. Truth be told, they don't like individuals doing it either. But right now we're talking strictly about corporations, and they're being equated to people by the Supreme Court, meaning that they have the same rights. A group of people getting together can express an idea just as an individual can express an idea. I mean, to me, this seems fundamentally true. Why does getting together, I mean, it just defies common sense. Why would I not be able to have the same level of protection on my speech if I say it in unison with someone else? I mean, there's no logic there. I mean, the left will try to convince you that there's logic there. And they'll usually point to how it ends up corrupting politicians. But it's not the speech that is corrupting the politician. It's not the money. Look, those are the incentive that's used, but the corruption comes from inside. The corruption comes from a decision to do something for whatever your reason. Now, I'm not saying that the bigger the temptation, the harder it is to walk away. Of course I understand that. But it's our job as citizens to hold these people accountable. And that's what I think is getting lost along the way. You know, it's almost though as we want to set up this system that will police itself, and we can go about, live our lives, not pay any attention to the system, but know, because the system is foolproof, that there's no way anything will come of that system that will create any problem for me. So I can go out, not be engaged, just kind of live my life, not pay any attention to what's going on, when in reality, the only thing that holds the republic together is for, I mean, look at what Franklin said coming out of the convention to the woman who asked him, sir, do we have a republic or a democracy or something like this? And he says, we have a republic as long as you can keep it that way. I mean, it's up to us. It's up to individuals to hold these guys accountable. It's the same thing with term limits to me. I'm not saying I'm against term limits. Maybe a very good thing. I think that the end result of what a term limit seeks to do is a good thing. But simply having a term limit that sets the time for how long a person can be in Congress, while that may help limit lifetime politicians, it's not going to solve the problem, because the problem is that we are not engaged as a people in the political process. And it's immoral people. And look, all of us are, you know, the Bible says we're all sinners who have fallen short of the glory of God. But there are people that seek to do good, and there are people to seek constantly their own selfish ambitions and desires, and they will use any platform they can. You know, I'm Blagojevich from Illinois jumps to mind. I mean, there's countless examples of this. Look at these guys look at Anthony Weiner sending inappropriate pics to some girl on Twitter in Seattle. God knows where else he's done that. That's not Twitter's fault. Twitter gave him a tool. It's not the girl's fault. The person at fault is Anthony Weiner. It's not iPhone's fault for making a camera in the iPhone. It's Anthony Weiner's fault for determining how he's going to use it. Same thing with Blagojevich and trying to allegedly raffle off a House or Senate seat or whatever it was. Once you make a decision to use something, use a position of power, and you're willing to trade it for something else, for a crony capitalistic decision, or picking winners and losers, or influencing the votes that you place in the House or the Senate or the White House, you know, signing legislation or the things that you push for as president, whatever. The way that you vote on the Supreme Court, it's corrupt people that make that happen, not money. This is akin to me to saying that we shouldn't have political debates because politicians lie. It's the same thing as saying corporations shouldn't be able to put money into elections within 60 days of the vote. It's very similar to saying politicians can't debate because they lie. Well, that's up for us to decide. That's up for us to use our brains. Look, just because more money is involved, it doesn't mean that you're the winner. Look at how much money Jeb Bush has. I mean, Jeb Bush paid between $2,500 and $3,000 per vote in Iowa. And he still has $50, $60 million in the bank. And he's probably still out fundraising. I don't know how he's pulling this off. But the point is that money doesn't mean that you're going to be successful. Money doesn't mean it's a way that you can achieve something. It's a way that you can get your voice heard. It's a way that you can make your case or what have you. Look at the Kansas City Royals, World Series champs. Look at where they stand in the list of biggest payrolls. How many times have the Yankees not even gotten close, and they've got a payroll, enormous payroll? Money can certainly help, but it doesn't mean that money is the one that wins every time. And it also doesn't mean that just because you limit money in politics, that there's no other way that these politicians are going to be corrupted. I mean, look at the Clintons. There's reason to think that this Clinton Foundation is not what it's all cracked up to be. There's reason to think that they use that as this, I don't know, as this mirage that looks like it's some benevolent organization, when in reality, it very well may be used to buy influence of Hillary Clinton should she become president of the United States. I mean, it's as though we think that we limit money, which actually limits speech of groups of people or individuals from saying what they want to say about a political candidate. Political speech. We're willing to limit that. And we think if we just take the money out, boom, problem solved. Well, look, these guys are always going to look for a solution. The crooks and those that are willing to be corrupted are always one step ahead of the game. And that's not going to solve the problem. What's going to solve the problem is an engaged electorate who demands that their politicians not be corrupted. And what's crazy to me is that we have some of these guys on the stage now who have shown us what it looks like to stand up to this apparatus. I think of Ted Cruz. I mean, I look at, you know, Rand stood up to this. I mean, Scott Walker had stood up to this. I think Bobby Jindal had done that in some way as well. I mean, that's what this looks like. I don't have to agree with every little thing with these guys. And there's others as well. I'm not picking any of these guys. Heck, a lot of those guys aren't even running now. But my point is that to turn this around, we need people that have demonstrated that they're willing to fight this. And the fight's not always pretty. This is what winning looks like. I'm telling you, the uglier this gets, the more the left is in desperation, the more the media is in desperation. And that is a key that we are making progress. They are not going to lay down and just let us have this. They are not. They're going to make us pry it out of their politically dead hands. And we've got to do all that we can to defeat them politically, to create victory politically, not apologize for it, not tell them when we get victory, we're going to toss them a few bones here and there. We've got to stop it. Anyway, when we get back, I'm going to wrap things up for the week and get back for one short final segment before the end of the week. So we'll be back in just a minute. Thanks for listening to The Antidote to Liberalism. I'm not a full-time podcaster, but I play one on this show. My daytime job is running a small business called Huff Promotional Strategies. We are a graphic design and promotional products company that helps clients with a wide range of projects ranging from logos and websites to promotional products and apparel. We have experience working with well-known brands, small businesses like ours, and everything in between. So if you need help with marketing or promotional products, why not give us a try? Visit huffpromotional.com/podcast today for more information, and you'll find a 10% discount code that we will apply to your next order. We work with businesses, churches, schools, civic groups, sports leagues. You get the idea. Visit huffpromotional.com/podcast today to learn more and to get your 10% discount code. That's huffpromotional.com/podcast. Well, welcome back to the Antidote to Liberalism. I am your host, Todd Huff. It is Friday. It is February 5th. It is a pleasure to be here. You notice a couple more things and continuing on this conversation about corruption in politics and so forth. I want to bring up something that, and hear me out for those of you that aren't, I don't know, that don't have a Christian mindset or that don't believe in the Bible. I'm going to cite a passage here. Even if you don't believe in the Bible, I think you can agree with this. The Bible says from the overflow of the heart, a man speaks. So in other words, our words come from what we hold and dwell upon and think about and desire and respect and love on the inside. If we have a heart that has been transformed by Jesus, if we have a heart that is committed to serving others, if we have a heart that is committed to proclaiming truth and exposing falsehood, then that will shape the words that come out of our mouths. If we have a heart that's full of anger and rage and resentment, that manifests itself in the words that we choose to speak. Of course, there's those that have mastered this. There's political masters who have masqueraded as something that they're not. Hypocrites, that's what a hypocrite is, someone who pretends to be something that they're not. And politicians can be very good at it, but the more that they speak, eventually their true selves will be shown. It's the reason that Obama, when he's questioned at this stupid gun control forum or whatever was on, CNN a couple weeks ago. You can see it in his eyes when people dare to question him. Dare to call into question his gun control rhetoric or his promises that can never go delivered, because gun control does not mean anything. Criminals will always get guns. The look he gave Taya Kyle as she was being very respectful, but disagreeing with his position. I have a picture of that on Twitter. But the point is, you see character is revealed through these instances. And when you see Bernie Sanders up there proclaiming anger and rage and resentment, blaming America, Hillary Clinton the same thing. You know, people act like this unlikability of Hillary is some sort of there's an error in translation between her head and her heart and how it comes across. Well, may I pose another theory? Maybe Hillary Clinton is exactly the type of individual, the corrupt politician that we're talking about here. And maybe, just maybe, her husband Bill, who was magnificent, by the way, at getting people on his side, having the likability factor. He was one that can masquerade that. But the magic is gone. The magic of the Clintons has left the building. And ironically, the left tells us they want to get this corruption out of politics. But since the corruption comes from the inside, from the heart, they absolutely refuse to deal with the issues that would change the heart. They refuse to accept absolute truth. They refuse to accept the anything that's not something that stands in support of moral relativism. They'll tell us that there is no right or wrong. There's just preferences. I mean, look at what they defend and even promote in some cases. Planned Parenthood selling baby body parts. The Benghazi lies and cover-up. Look, they want to compare Benghazi to attacks on other U.S. embassies as though this has not happened. You know, embassies get attacked. That's the risk of doing this, right? That's what they want to paint this as. But we're talking about decisions of human intention. We intentionally made decisions when the chips were down to not go in and help these guys. Now, whoever's to blame for that, I'll let you decide. But it was incompetent to not give them enough guards, not enough security. But once they knew what was going on, there was something altogether different when you did not send the support that was ready to go. Helicopters ready to take off and send in troops. Refusals to send F-16s or what have you low and fast and loud over the city. Whatever the requests were refused because the decision, the intentional decision, the decision that came from the human heart, from those that wanted to look good politically. They put their political reputation above the lives of these people. Because, hey, Osama was dead and GM was alive. So there was no more terrorism. This was 2 months before an election. There's no way they were going to acknowledge this as terrorism. Hence, we have a video blaming America yet again for something, some obscure filmmaker somewhere, I think California, I don't even know. But it's those decisions that are the problem with Benghazi. I mean, of course, leaving these guys with not enough security at the beginning, I think was still fueled by the same thing, which was, we don't want to make this look politically like something we don't want to defend. But the decisions when the chips were down, when the bullets were flying, those are the decisions that are the problem with Benghazi. And this is what the left has proven that they want to stand up for and defend. So changing Citizens United, getting money out of politics, trying to act like that is the problem, is folly. The folly is the human heart. And if you want to change something, then let's start talking about how to make better people. Let's start talking about values that matter. I mean, our founders understood that a constitutional republic, a free people, could only survive so long as its people were moral and decent. And now when you have a political party that stands in opposition oftentimes, not only do they stand in opposition of, sometimes they promote the very evil that needs to be eradicated, as is the case with Planned Parenthood selling these baby parts. And others, there's other things as well. But my point is, the evil comes from inside. It's a deliberate intention, a decision by the human heart. It's not the money. Yes, the money can push people to make those decisions, but it's still the decision of the internal human heart. Out of the overflow of the heart, the mouth speaks. And so the solution, the long-term solution, is for us to be engaged. Who said this, that keeping a republic was easy? I mean, we have the best place that this world has ever known. The most prosperous, the most just amazing society, because it was created by people, individual free people making decisions, making their individual lives better, which raised the tide for everyone. And we can't let the decisions of a few corrupt politicians change that. Get rid of the corrupt politicians. And I know, look, I'm well aware that there is a lot of corruption in D.C. But I think it's because we've allowed it more than because there's money there. We've allowed it. We have to stop this. An engaged electorate is better than any set of these rules that are designed to catch these guys, to prevent them from being corrupted. Because we can vote them out. We can hold them accountable. And that's what has to happen. I don't care about any term limit rules or any other limits that we want to put on Congress. What's going to make this matter, what's going to make a change in the long run, is an engaged, informed, and impassioned electorate. So anyway, guys, I've got to wrap up. It's been a pleasure as always. If you want to reach out to me, feel free to contact me via email. You could do that by emailing Todd at theantidotoliberalism.com, or you can tweet me at Common Sense Gear. But guys, it's going to wrap it up for me. Have a great weekend. Enjoy the Super Bowl. We'll see you Monday. Take care.
Thank you for listening to The Antidote to Liberalism. Your inoculations are now up to date. But since the disease of liberalism is ubiquitous and highly contagious, we need to see you again tomorrow. In the meantime, to help you boost your immunity, please rate, review, and subscribe to our podcast.